This episode is brought to you by Gin & Co., author website design specialists. If you want a beautiful and functional website to promote your books and brand, reach out to Gin today. His work includes tailored, expertly designed professional author websites. I finally have a website I'm proud to share. And we've got a special offer for Words and Nerds listeners. Reach out today and get a free domain name and website hosting for the first year. You can get their website essentials package, includes domain name, website hosting, backup and security free for the first year with any website purchase. This is valued at $330 a year. Choose a website designed to bring your author brand to life. You can find more details about this special offer at ginand.co/wordsandnerds. Welcome to the 2024 series of the Words and Nerds podcast. I'm Danny B, author, publisher, and your podcast host. With over 1 million plays, thanks to you, listeners, readers, writers, creatives, teachers, librarians, and book lovers, thank you for coming along for the journey where we bring you relaxed and real conversations about writing and creativity. If you love an episode, you can leave a review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also follow the podcast on Instagram or Facebook at Danny V Words and Nerds Podcast. Or you can check out my brand new website designed by Gin & Co. at dannyv.com.au.
Hi everyone, welcome to Words and Nerds. I'm WA thriller writer Alex Duke. Today, I'm with an absolute master of the craft, an Adelaide-based writer who has written multiple novels for audiences, both young and old. Her latest is a taut psychological thriller that investigates a historical crime through the perspective of two very different women. I am speaking, of course, to Vicky Wakefield. Vicky, welcome to Words and Nerds.
Hi Alex, thanks for having me. I do like that description of being the master.
Well, I can say that with some authority because I did just finish reading your book that we're going to be talking about today. That is called To the River. First, before we dive in, Vicky, just tell me a bit about the book in your own words.
Oh gosh, this is I think for some writers, their most feared question, the old elevator pitch, which is immediately 400 pages flashes through my mind and my brain screeches off the page. It's funny how it's really difficult to sum things up in a small way, but I'll try. This is a story that begins in 2007 with a deadly fire in a caravan park in remote Australia that kills 9 people. And that includes one of our protagonists, Sabine's mother and younger sister. Sabine is arrested for the crime and confesses, and she comes from quite a troubled family, so no one is particularly surprised, but she escapes custody and disappears. And then we're in 12 years later, and Rachel is introduced, my second character, who's an ambitious journalist. And she has suspected that Sabine made her way to the river, and she's been on the lookout, and she's finally spotted her. So from there comes a push-pull kind of relationship between two women, one a murderer and a fugitive, the other a journalist who's trying to get to the truth. And from there it gets quite deadly, as there appears to be someone out there who doesn't want this story to be told.
Mm.
I think that's about it.
Yeah, great. And of course, there is a really great dog.
There's an awesome dog. There are a lot of dogs in my books. I can't imagine it would feel strange to me to write a story that didn't have a dog.
No, absolutely. So one thing I was wondering as I was reading the novel was, as you say, there's Sabine and Rachel. When you were sort of, I guess when you had the idea for the novel, who entered your mind first? Who was the first character? Was it Sabine or Rachel?
It was definitely Sabine. I think she, I've written YA as well and 5 books in for young adults. I think that young teen protagonist voice comes naturally to me, and so I thought I was writing another young adult novel, but it actually turned into something different as I navigated things, I realised the tone was quite adult, the storyline too, and Rachel popped in as well, and it just became a completely different book. So I'd actually taken a chapter that I'd written of a young adult novel quite some time ago, and because I had just started writing crime, it felt quite natural to go, okay, well, that's what this book is too, and then move on from there. So, yeah, Sabine was the first. And I think sometimes you just think with a story, what is the problem? Who is the protagonist? And Sabine was very clear in my mind when I was thinking about this fire in a caravan community. And she turned up and she was a teenager at the time. So, but obviously this book spans 12 years, so she's very much an adult when she and Rachel meet.
With Rachel being a journalist, often crime novels are obviously the investigating character is either a cop or a journalist, and there's sort of differences between them, I suppose. Obvious differences between them, but also in their motivations, I suppose, is more what I mean. I'm wondering, was there ever a thought to making Rachel a, you know, like a detective or something like that? Was she always a journalist?
She was always a journalist because that's my background, and obviously I'm more familiar with that. That said, I had to do a fair amount of research on policing, and particularly in South Australia, and even narrowing it down further to our waterways, so the water police. And I always felt comfortable in Rachel being a journalist. She's reached a point in her life where things are changing. Her kids have grown up and moved away. She's redundant from her job. She's looking for something to latch onto, and it just happens to be Sabine's story, which is she thinks might save her, but in fact might do something very different.
Obviously, the book is called To the River, and as you just mentioned, with the waterways and the water police. Tell me a little bit about what was it about the river setting that drew you in? That feels like a, you know, there was a lot of things going through your mind when you decided on that.
It is specific and it has a particular atmosphere, and that's something I've been fascinated with since I was a kid. I think I must have been, very young when I read River Murray Mary by Colin Tealy, and that's an illustrated book but with quite a lot of words. So I was reading that at a young age and was fascinated by the river. And obviously we're not too far away where I live in Adelaide, so we visit as often as we can. It's beautiful, but it's also, I think it's got the atmosphere that I needed for this story. There's something a little surreal and spooky about it, that something so beautiful can also be so dangerous. And we've just seen that with the recent floods, like just awful things happening that can't be stopped by something so unstoppable. So, I tend to visit places, and if I get a spark, it goes from there, and I can't switch out of that as the setting. Once it's set in my mind, that's it, I have to run with it. And it was very much like that with this book, and pretty much all of my others. Every setting has been in some way linked to the very first idea that I have, or a scene that I picture, or a character that I'm thinking about. They're intrinsically linked from the beginning, so I just tend to be following my own lead, I guess.
Yeah, and I'm just leafing through the book here, and luckily I remember it was the final line of the book, and I guess I don't want to spoil anything, but the final line is great because obviously it relates to this kind of dual nature of the river. And as you say, it's, you know, these places are very beautiful, but then there's often, you know, quite a bit more to them. What lies beneath, as it were.
And when you think about the river, it's long. It covers you know, thousands of kilometres, there's so many places to hide. And I think the advantage of knowing the river and knowing it really well makes it like the perfect rabbit warren to avoid detection. So, yeah, that when Sabine went on the run, she grew up on the river with her grandparents, and that was the logical place for her to go.
Mm. Yeah. So you mentioned just before, you know, doing research with in regards to policing. I'm wondering if you could, you know, talk us through your researching process and, you know, research in regards to anything else that you, you know, any other topics for the novel that you had to do.
I guess my research technique is immersion more than anything, just being in a place and listening to stories. And I'm not so much a meticulous researcher in that I'm collecting facts and information. I'm looking for a feeling. I'm looking for people who pop up in the story. So in terms of this, it was a little bit of a doomed research thing with the river, because I'd booked a houseboat trip, which would have been perfect just to nail those final details. But then the floods came in 2022, and it was immediately apparent that this is not something that was going to, you know, go away very quickly. And it changed the complete landscape of the river. It was just completely different from when I started writing the book. So so I have several places that I would go to get that feeling, but goodness me, it changed over a period of time. We went from record low water levels in the river and quite an arid landscape to suddenly green, damaged. There's so much stuff floating around in the river that it was dangerous to be on it. Many people took their houseboats out of the river and there was very little traffic. It was just an eerie landscape. And it was a little bit daunting in the beginning, because I thought, oh, I'm going to have to change this whole storyline. And then I realised, no, I don't need to do that. I just need to go back to what I'm remembering from before. And luckily, I've got a fairly long imagination and memory, and I was able to do that. So yeah, research wise I want to be knee deep in mud. I want to be feeling the textures and smelling the air and taking my dog for a walk and that kind of thing, rather than sifting through historical details, although that was part of it too. It was very much a research level that was more about being there as often as I could.
Yeah, I often think that with the research for novels, it can be a bit of a you know, like a wild goose chase, gathering you know, items of information, putting in dates, street names, this and that. You know, obviously you want to have some degree of authenticity, but making it too you know, focusing on that too much at the expense of, as you say, the feeling. Is, you know, can impact the work, I suppose. And I wonder if you can maybe talk through a couple, you know, really sort of specific images or things that, you know, jumped out from your research, or even from your memory, that informed the feeling of the setting.
Sure. Well, I was very lucky to be in contact with a family who own a property on the river near Neil Dotty in South Australia, which is it's called Cliff View, and it's an amazing property that was I think 1902 was built, and that's what the house at Malachi's Reach is based on. When readers find the scenes with the cellar, that is an exact place that really functions as it does in the book. It's also interestingly the same place. I didn't know this at the time, but it was used as a set for Run Rabbit Run with Sarah Snoop.
So, cool.
That kind of little things like that made its way in, which readers will also discover if they read, they'll find that those little tiny links of stuff that overlapped when I was walking through that house and you know, discovering the atmosphere of it and the history behind the home, the floods in 56, which were devastating. Those kind of things came in super handy for having, it's okay to make things up, but I need a real anchor or setting sometimes. I need to just go back to a place in my head and know exactly what I'm experiencing so that I can bring that to the page. So that was an amazing place to go and visit. Lots of little, plenty of details don't make it, obviously, because you can be bogged down in the minutiae of stuff that you've discovered that's absolutely fascinating but doesn't belong in the book. I could talk to you about yabbies spawning and how eerie it is and, all kinds of stuff that I could have brought into it. But, you know, sometimes you have to drag yourself back and go, no, hang on a minute, just take one road at a time and you've got to leave some of this stuff out. So it's a shame, but, yeah, folders of stuff and memories and snippets of conversations won't even make its way into the book.
I think those details that don't make it in, though, it's almost like they do somehow, because they make a more complete picture in, you know, as your, like, you know, the author's own mind. And then I think there's a, if the author has, you know, a lot more information, a lot more detail or texture than that goes into the book, then that tends to make the stuff that does go into the book sort of better supported in some way.
Absolutely, it's all foundational. It all becomes, for me, it's tone. Like everything feeds into tone. So I think if there's an eerie kind of atmosphere to this book, it's because of all of that stuff that I learned and collected, and you know, about things found in the earth when those new big mansions are built and things like that. Like I was a bit haunted by some of that stuff that I did discover. So. I feel like if I brought some of that to the book, then I was lucky to be able to do that. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Another aspect of the, of the novel, which, I suppose is a touch separate in a way to the setting, is it's pretty pacey. It really like moves along at a decent clip and, you know, in a really compelling way. I'm interested in when you're actually drafting the manuscript, how much attention do you or thought do you put to the, you know, the idea of making everything always moving forward, always advancing, to kind of give it that propulsiveness that a thriller needs? Or is that just come intuitively to you?
No, I think I work really, I think I'm naturally a spare writer. Like I don't tend to put stuff in that doesn't need to be there because I feel I'm very, very bad at cutting. So I make sure it's pretty lean to begin with. And usually my first draft, compare the word count of the first draft with the end draft, I swear I've been within 2,000 words every time. So I tend to... Plus, I work through each draft so multiple times and it ends up being pretty lean. In terms of pace, I love that you've said that because I think my books are a bit slow burn and character driven, so pace can be a problem. But as long as I have my characters doing something or reacting to something or seeking something, then I figure that's I've done my job and I can't do much more than that because I don't write plot-based. Plot is not my strength. Plot arises from character for me, so as long as I keep the characters moving, I feel like I handle pace without actively looking to make it pacey.
Well, I think, in my opinion, things can be, you know, a sort of slow burn and still have a really decent pace. People don't, you know, there doesn't have to be like a bank heist in one chapter and then a car chase in the next chapter. You know, there can be, you know, small sort of deliberate character-based advancements that still keeps it, you know, keeps it advancing and gives it a healthy pace that the, you know, and with a focus on character as well, it does tend to, you know, involve you on an emotional level rather than just a plot level.
I find slow burn compelling, so that's what I aim for. I think if my characters are complex enough and conflicted enough, then that will happen. So I'm always conscious of their story and where are they, how are they changing, how are they moving? And when you have two characters like Rachel and Sabine who are so very different, at what point do they converge? And is that the climax or is that just, okay, finally now they're working together, how are they going to solve the bigger problem? Eventually that's, I'm so focused on character that I'm really, plot is incidental. And although I kind of know what's going to happen, I don't really, because they do tend to react in ways that I'm not necessarily driving or stage managing, you know. So there's plenty of room for the story to go wherever, but quite often I have to bring it back because I know what the ending will be, but I have to find a different way to get there.
Mm. With the these two characters, obviously, yeah, like you're saying, a character is, you know, extremely important to how the novel works, and within that, I think is the, you know, each character's voice. How do you address the differences / similarities between the two main characters' voices when you're writing?
Sure. This is the first time I've written a full-length novel in third-person close perspective. Previously, I'm mostly third-person. So previously, I tend to write in first-person. So that really close perspective doesn't allow me any room for my own voice most of the time. So this was actually quite freeing in a way that I felt that there were three of us in this book. I was there, but I have Sabine and Rachel, who are two very different people. So voice-wise, I hope that the whole thing is cohesive in a way that also shows that they are very different. But I did find that this was not at all as challenging as I thought it would be. So I think maybe third person comes quite naturally to me. I didn't ever question my voice in this book. It just kind of trundled on. It's an interesting question because I only recently thought about it, that I did dramatically change my voice in this book. And yet it's still recognisably mine. I don't know how that can be, but that's kind of how it worked out. Yeah, so two very different women, but the voice of all of us is there on the page. So my style is allowed to creep in a little bit because it is third person, but it's also a close perspective. So I have to make sure only Rachel can know what Rachel knows, only Sabine can know what she knows, and the way they articulate their thoughts are very different. So... yeah, I can't say that I focused too hard on that stuff, and I hope that it worked without me doing that, because it's not something I thought about a lot with this book, which is odd in hindsight.
Yeah, it is odd because it is quite, you know, like integral to how it works, really, with the, you know, going between the two perspectives. That's interesting. And yeah, I do think as well, like, I think you're quite right about the with third person, it does in a way allow for, you know, an author to almost be a bit more, like, by nature of the perspective, a bit more restrained. And so then when you do put in little bits and pieces of voice, it can sort of stand out perhaps a little bit more than if it was all over, you know, every page. So it's a pretty interesting way to do things. I didn't actually know this, but before we started this conversation, you let me know that today is actually the publication day for the novel. So I'm pretty lucky to be speaking to you on the publication day. So we're recording this on the 27th of February. Tell me about the journey to publication from this novel. It's you know, every novel seems to take about 1,000 years to go from drafting to publication day. So you must be feeling pretty good about yourself.
Yeah, this is a conversation I have sometimes with people. It's very different with your first book, and you go through a bit of a change as you go through. I think mostly what I feel with this book is like an immense amount of pride because it was tough, but also a little bit quietly numb. And also, you know, this is my 7th book, so I'm accustomed to getting number with each book. It shouldn't be that way, but I think it's not a bad feeling because I'm no longer anxious about reviews or worried about how the book will be received. I suffer much less of that these days. I'm more resigned to I've made this thing and I hope you like it, and that's it. But this book was probably 3 years from first page to this day. And that seems to be about my incubation period, between 2 and 3 years for each book. But because I'm writing more than one at the same time, I can publish more regularly than that. So, but half of my brain is always already working on the other one, and part of me wants to celebrate this one, but I'm always multitasking so much that it's a strange feeling. It's a little bit surreal. You would know. How do you feel on that day? Has it changed?
Well, good question. I'll have to let you know when I do get my first book over the line. I can't imagine feeling numb about it. I think I'd, you know, explode into 1,000 pieces. Yeah. It's interesting though you say that though, because the yeah, it maybe becomes a bit more like, you know, you've done it 7 times before, so you're not sort of necessarily living and dying by it. Do you feel that does that just apply to like when the final, you know, book is, you know, hits the bookshelves, or is that sort of woven throughout the writing process over that 3 years, that you're feeling a little less you know, it sounds, my interpretation of what you're saying is it sort of sounds like you're being maybe a bit less anxious about how you're approaching it, and you're sort of more confident in it.
Yeah, the confidence is a thing, but it's also to explain the numbness. It's not a lack of pride or joy or accomplishment. It's none of those things. It's that my priorities have changed over time, and I thought, you know, when writing books and being published was the dream, I thought that publication day was the culmination of that dream, and that seeing your book on the shelf, like the buzz, would be there forever. But then some time ago I realised that, no, my dream is something different. The process is the dream, the whole, the internal stuff, the actual writing, I mean, it's hard, but like, what's anything that's worthwhile is kind of hard, isn't it? Mm. So, yeah, no, I'm finding now that and probably because I'm such an introvert as well, you know, the best part of the process for me is actually the day that I close my iPad and go, right, okay, it's ready for someone else to see. And that could be, you know, a close friend, or it could be my editor, who's generally, you know, in the first people to read my books. So I think that moment is probably the most rewarding, knowing that, because I hang on to things for a really long time too. I don't actually send out a draft until I know I've done absolutely everything I can do and I've run out of ideas, or it just simply feels ready, and that, you know, is after a couple of years generally. So that's probably the best moment. Everything else is wonderful, but let's face it, there's a lot of up and downs in this industry, and if I relied on success to make me happy, I'd be miserable. Loving the process, I think, is my absolute goal now, and being excited as I am today to go, okay, these characters need to get out of my head now because there's a lineup outside the door and I need to move forward with the next thing, or the next two things, because I need to have two on the boil so that I'm not conflicted when I have, you know, those moments where there are no ideas.
I've spoken to quite a few authors who I won't name, who you know, have been through the publishing meat grinder several times and look a little worse for wear after the, as you say, the ups and downs. So it certainly does seem like, you know, you got to enjoy the process. It feels like a bit of a cliche, but like I think it's extremely true, because otherwise there's less destructive ways to spend your time probably.
There's plenty of jobs out there that you think you wouldn't want to do in your life if you had the choice. And this is one where if you can't find the reward in the process, then just forget it.
Yeah, just absolutely.
Something else.
I'm interested in back when you were, you know, released your first novel, were you, how long was your journey towards that milestone, and did you think it would be your only published novel?
But my journey was incredibly fast from the point that I decided to actually do the damn work. I stuffed around for years thinking I'm not good enough, I don't have the education behind me, because I haven't studied creative writing. You know, I undercut myself all the time and sabotage myself. So I have this thing where I need to be really good at something before I show it to the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that's difficult when you write a book, because you have to take this fledgling thing that is probably absolute crap but may have glimmers of this could be good, and show it to someone, like, just, you know, holding your heart in your hand and saying, here. Mm. It's tough, but it's, you know, at the time I was just determined. I got to an age where I thought, no, I need to do this because I just need to do it for myself. So I sit down, write the damn book. I did have some validation that came from several places, so I think that's important. It's not like you can just go, all right, suddenly I'm going to write a book. I think you need steps along the way where someone says to you, you can do this, this is good. So I did have those, and I also had a request from a publisher after I gave them one page. But that was it. I needed that to go, okay, well, now I need to write 300 more. and it was fairly quick. I think I wrote my first book, All I Ever Wanted, in about 8 months. And not knowing any better, I sent it out too early. Like, it needed so much more work. But clearly they saw something in that, and I had that encouragement from there on. And I've learned so much since publishing that book by working with my editor, Penny. Now, we've been together through all of my books so far, and she's amazing. Learned so much from her now that I don't question whether I can do this anymore. I only question whether is this the right story, and do I have the headspace for it right now while life is going on around me? They're the only two questions. So I would say everyone's journey is different. I was blessed with a lot of luck in the beginning, I think, and maybe a smidge of talent. So from there, it's been a learning process and working really, really hard, like never stopping.
Yeah, that's great. It's interesting as well that you've stuck with the same editor. I presume, so this novel is published by Text Publishing. Have you been with Text the whole time?
I've been with Text the whole time, and Penny Houston from the beginning, I'm sure something might change in the future, but for now, like, I just can't imagine working with anyone else. She just gets me. She gives me so much space to just do my thing before she steps in and says, all right, now we need to fix what's broken. It's a really good working relationship, I think.
Yeah, that's great. There must be a lot of trust between you two.
Yeah, I think she's a lot more, I don't know, we're both Virgos, it shouldn't work. Should be doomed.
Yeah.
Yeah, it works. Yeah, I think if some writers are really unlucky, they may have all the talent in the world and they have the wrong person working with them. It's really important to find the right person because, gosh, it makes your job a lot easier and makes you love your job.
Yeah, totally, totally. I wonder. I'm always just so interested in authors' individual journeys, and like you kind of refer earlier to back in the day, kind of like the, sharing your work with someone, and you're maybe a bit inexperienced, not super sure how well it works or whatever. And I think like for someone reading, like, a friend or whomever, reading a manuscript, sometimes the scariest thing probably is have your aspiring writer friend say, "Would you like to read my manuscript?" And you're like, "Oh my God," because it's such a, showing someone a painting, for example, it's, you could look at it for a few minutes, but obviously, reading a manuscript can take quite a while. It's quite an investment of time. So, who did you, have in your life that you, reached out to? Were they people who you knew were readers, or people who just knew you really well? Or
I think I'm quite set in my habits now. Right from the beginning, I held things very close for a long time. Like, no one reads until I'm happy that I've done all I can do. So I don't exactly have what I call, beta readers that help me as I go. I will write a book for a couple of years. Possibly I'll, if I get drunk enough, sometimes I will share a chapter with some close writer friends if we're having some beveraginos. But yeah, that doesn't happen too often. And then the next day I feel like it's the walk of shame. I feel really exposed and like, oh no, what have I done?
That's not the worst thing anyone's ever done when they've had a bit too much to drink.
I know, right? Yeah, but no, it's. I think I'm just really, really private about my writing until I'm ready to let it go a bit. But I do have a couple of close friends who are also writers, and we have a bit of a pact that we will not blow smoke up each other's asses. We will be honest and helpful and try to make this thing better. So there's, there's some tough love there, but there's also huge amount of trust, and it's a privilege to read other people's work in those early stages. But I think I'm someone who, if in those early stages someone was particularly brutal, I would fall in a heap and that's it. I would give up. So
even after seven books,
absolutely, yeah. It comes back to that thing of where I'm confident until I'm not, and then I think I would be crushed by letting people read my work too early, because let's face it, none of it is super great in the beginning. Mm. And we can get a bit excited about, I've written this book and I want everyone to read it. I encourage most writers to give it five or six goes before doing that, unless you are so feeling so aimless that you can't do this without outside help. I'm actually a fan of keeping things close for as long as you need to get to know your characters before other people do. Otherwise, sometimes they can raise questions that throw you off track and you lose the scent of the story that you had in the beginning. And yeah, I'm grateful for my readers when they step in, but it's very, very late in the process. Like, the book is done. Mm. And from there, I'm asking for, is my writing good this time? Is the atmosphere there? Are the characters believable? That's the kind of thing, not the actual, I guess I'm not asking, is the writing good? I'm not even asking that. I'm just looking for, do you as a reader like this book? Yeah, so, and that's tricky. A lot of people benefit greatly from being part of a community where there's lots of sharing going on, but I think I'd be terrified and I would just stop. So.
Yeah, you're hitting on something that I like. I talk about this every chance I get.
Okay.
People's ear about off about it, but I think one of the most challenging things for writers is that everyone does it quite differently. Some people, you know, work like you've described. Some people want, you know, input earlier on. Some people meticulously plan everything. Some people make it up as they go. And one of the if your brain is wired in a particular way and you, I don't know, say for example, if your an author's brain is wired in a way that they need to have feedback early, but they hear you talking about your process and they're like, well, Vicky's great, I'm gonna work like her. It's not a fun time to force yourself into the wrong way of, so, you know, wrong way for you process of writing. And I think one of the aspects of what makes a particular writer lucky is sometimes they stumble upon the right process with their first go at writing.
Yeah, they do.
Because if you try and do it a way that doesn't work for you, it's not fun.
Well, I liken it a bit to if you're a discus thrower, you know, and you're throwing for miles and then someone comes along and says, you're not doing that right, you need to change your throw. And the thing spins off in another direction and lands 50 metres short. Like, you just, some things shouldn't be changed if they're working.
Mm.
You have to keep going. Yeah, and I reckon, I know a lot of writers now, and I didn't in the beginning. I was so in my own head that I didn't even think that writers talked about this stuff. It was just strange. Now I love talking about it because I find other writers' process infinitely fascinating.
Mm.
So I could talk about it all day, and I don't think there's a single writer that I know that we all do something the same way. We're all so different.
Yeah.
And those who need validation in incremental steps, I totally get it. I totally get it, because it's a long thing. A book is a really long thing. It takes a huge amount of time and emotional effort, and you want to know you're on the right track. I think I'm only now just comfortable in a space where I go, you know what, I could stop writing and I'd still be really happy with what I've achieved. Mm. But, you know, there comes a point where you go, if I change my process, am I not going to be able to do this? I don't really know. I could. It happens the same way every time, regardless of what I want to do. It's tricky. I don't know, writers' brains, they're just neurotic.
Yeah. Yeah, indeed. So To the River is out now, you know, at all good bookstores, I guess, is a thing people say. So I would very much encourage everyone to go and check it out. It's a ripping yarn. It's, you know, it's got some great characters. It really dives into it and makes really excellent use of the setting, and it's just a great read, really, really strong recommend for me. So thank you very much for your time, and I will let you get back to working on addressing that line of communication.